Pure Dog Talk is the voice of purebred dogs. We talk to the legends of the sport and give you the tips and tools to create an awesome life with your purebred dog. From showing to preservation breeding, from competitive obedience to field work, from agility to therapy dogs, and all the fun in between, your passion is our purpose. Welcome to Pure Dog Talk. I am your host, Laura Reeves, and we are at the Shetland Sheepdog Club of America National Specialty in Albany, Oregon, with a fabulous Love the Breeds interview. And I am so excited. I have like this table full of people to talk about a very, very fun breed. So welcome, everyone. And we're going to go around the table and introduce yourselves. Go.
I'm Jenny Hines from Wilton, Connecticut. I'm second generation Sheltie breeder. I've been involved for 40 plus years.
Awesome. Awesome.
Dr. Victor Stora, I've been in Shelties for about 5 years. I'm a veterinary geneticist and reproduction specialist.
Okay, hey, you might get to be a new podcast person all by yourself. Go.
I'm Jessica Starbuck. I am from Brooksville, Florida. I've been in Shelties for about 30 years now.
You just won a ribbon. I saw it.
I'm Kate Hines. I'm from Wilton, Connecticut, and I've been in Shelties probably about 10 years.
And how old are you?
I'm 17.
And do you participate in junior showmanship?
Yes. She's 17.
Excellent.
Years.
She's third generation.
Yeah, and I'm
she's
a third generation. I'm Jenny's daughter.
Oh, so. Okay. Here we go. Now we're getting some connectivity here.
I'm Natalie Hollinger. I'm from Sterling, Virginia. I've been in Shelties for about 2.5 years, but I was in sporting dogs before.
Excellent.
I'm Katie Kerwalski. I've been in Shelties for like 15 years, and I'm from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
Excellent.
I'm Cheryl Kreitzer. I've been in Brittany's 27 years and in Shelties 2.
Okay.
I'm Chris Machado. I've been in Shelties for 40 years plus.
Wonderful. This is an incredibly great group of people to talk about a very fun and very popular little breed, right? So what is it that makes a Shetland Sheepdog a great pet or companion? Why did you get a Shetland Sheepdog? And everybody, like, go one at a time.
I just think Shelties are the best breed. I guess I didn't have a lot of choice because my mom bred them before I was born, but in a way I did because, you know, when I got to be where I was old enough to show, she did give me the choice of having a few other breeds, but I ultimately went back and joined into my mom's breeding program, and I just think they're a beautiful breed. They're smart, intelligent, clean, easy to train, willing to please, and I just think that Shelties spoil you for other breeds.
Good size, I think. They're a good size.
Perfect size, yeah.
Who's next?
So I got a Sheltie not by will. My uncle had one, and he didn't want it anymore, so he gave it to us. And that bloomed into what it is now. And so when I was an undergrad, I snuck 2 dogs from my breeder back home, and now it's 15 of them, and it's just kind of bloomed from there. And I like the size, and then they're fancy for their size, and you don't really see that often.
Yes.
Yeah, they're a nice little hardy breed and very intelligent and eager to please, and it makes them a lot of fun to live with. And, you know, they're athletic animals, so you can go take them on a run, and they're just as good. You can hang out in your apartment with them. And
okay, good. Third generation, you really didn't have any options, did you?
Yeah, well, both my sisters got different breeds, actually, okay. But I wanted a Husky, and my mom said no. And, so I got a Sheltie for my 7th birthday, and I don't regret having one at all. I want to carry on the Shelties, and, you know, I might have 1 or 2 breeds along the way, but mainly I want to have Shelties just because I think they're great dogs.
I love that. Future of our sport right here. Good job, Mom. Next. And you're new, right?
So this I'm new. I worked for a sporting dog handler for a long time, and then got into the Shelties about 2.5 years ago.
We stole her.
Yeah, they stole her. It's like a tug of war, but
right. Which sporting breed now? Am I gonna cry here?
Springers. Springers. I had an English cocker. I've been a Springer handler for a long time, but I just bred my first litter with Jenny. Co-bred Jenny.
Wonderful.
So it was awesome. I mean, they're smart. They're versatile. They're adaptable, and they have enough hair that you can play with, but
they
not
can be
too
pretty.
Much. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So no regrets, no going back. Sorry, Kelly.
No backs.
My favorite thing is how adaptable they are. I've had them for most of my life and in several different capacities, but I live in an apartment now, and my Sheltie is completely happy with that. They can live in an apartment. They can live on a farm. They're just completely content with wherever you choose to put them.
Nice.
They're kind of the comedian.
Oh, yeah.
I've got one that we used to do handling class, and as a puppy, we would go around the ring, and at the end of class, we have to mop up every time we're done. He would ride the mop around. So when we first got here the first day, he's bouncing at the X-Pen, and the guy says, I'm just mopping. Is he afraid of the mop? I said, no. He says, well, he can come see it. I let him out. He's 2 years old. He goes, stands on the mop, and he runs down the aisleway on top of the mop.
That's fabulous. 40 years, you stuck with it.
And I never had another dog. Mm. I really had never had a dog. My mom's two uncles raised English setters in Worcester, Massachusetts. And they had like big kennels with fencing. And my mom felt that a dog didn't belong in the city. We didn't really live in the city, but in Massachusetts, they don't have any fences. And so she thought it was just ridiculous to have a dog that could get hit. All the dogs on our street got hit by snowplows, fell in the river and drowned. So we were allowed to have an indoor cat, and that was it. So when I got married, my husband, of course, wanted a dog, and my best friend's mom bought my best friend and I each. I had Hansel, and she had Gretel.
Aww.
He was a try from two famous kennels, and she was a sable. And we had them for years. And then from there, I met a really top handler. I called her one day out of the paper because I had this Hansel, and I wanted to breed him. And it was Pepper. And she's like, this is going to take a long time. I'm watching the football game. Call me tomorrow and you'll come out and meet me and see, you know, because she wanted to see this dog. And she said, he's really not a bad dog, but he shouldn't be bred, but you can start going to the shows with me. And so I did. And that was that.
I love this. We're going to have to add a piece on this about mentorship and kind of the family, and that might even split out into a whole
other
thing.
I did fix her up with my brother-in-law. They did get married, and she is still married to him to this day.
Oh, my God, that is so fabulous. Only dogs can bring us this kind of life, I think, is one of the things that I love about purebred dogs, right? I mean, that we have this, all of us, these connections. And so, I mean, great size, great personality, all of those things. What are the drawbacks? Like, who would not be a really good owner for a Shetland Sheepdog? Any ideas? Everybody should have a Sheltie?
They're so adaptable. So right, kind of whatever your lifestyle is.
I mean, somebody so that wants like an aggressive dog or like a dog to be
a guard dog.
Although behind a fence or behind a wall, they think they're something else. Yeah. You know? And then when you open the fence of the door, they would be like, oh, what did I say? But I mean, really, for a dog to kind of ward off somebody that you wouldn't want, you know, coming in your house or whatever, they're perfectly fine for that. But I mean, I would think that somebody just wanting more of a showpiece or for aggression or whatever, which isn't wouldn't be your ideal owner for any dog.
Exactly,
honestly, would probably not want a Sheltie.
Or somebody's gonna brush it more than once a week, which is very minimal grooming.
Yeah.
To keep it, but
yeah,
you do have to brush them.
Well, but not even really that often. I mean, if they have correct coat, they really don't mat.
Right.
And they almost shed off the dirt in a lot of ways. But if you're not interested in, if you want an absolute pristine house with no hair at all, and they don't shed constantly like some breeds, but if you really can't deal with any hair loss, then perhaps not. But they make up for it in so many other ways.
Talk to me about their talking. They are a vocal breed. How do we feel about that? Is that something that you hear from owners that it's too much or that they're quiet? When you have an apartment, yours is good.
Well, mine's debarked.
Okay. Softened.
Bark softened.
Yes.
Yeah.
But the thing of it is that people read, they bark a lot. And then I have people ask me, do they bark a lot? Mm-hmm. And I said, well, they bark if there's a reason to bark. I mean, they just don't, if they're in here, they're just not walking around, you know, barking. And that's, I think, what people think. And then when you say to people, well, you know, if somebody knocks on your door or your post guy comes to, you know, and they hear something, they're going to bark at that. And then they think, oh, okay, well, that's different than what I thought. But what the difference is, I think, between this breed and some other breeds is that, you know, if you had a Dalmatian or a Lab, they would think, oh, that's the trash guy. He comes every Tuesday.
Right.
He's been coming every Tuesday for 2 years, so I'm not going to bark at him. Whereas a Sheltie, every Tuesday, it's like, the trash guy's here, the trash guy's here.
That's kind of
the difference.
Like, celebration.
Yeah. I had one in an apartment when I first got mine. We have a house now, but because he was the only dog, he didn't bark as often. Now he has a friend, so they, like,
talk to each other.
Yeah. 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 So, like, when you let it, What do you know about him? It's great. He's like, oh my God, I'm so happy to see you. And he barks out of joy.
But they bark when there's a reason, but they just don't bark constantly.
Yeah, they're not recreational barkers. You know?
Yeah, and they don't like carry on. Like, they bark over what they feel the need to bark over, and then they stop. Like, it's not like done. They continually bark.
I mean, I think some that, you know, have incorrect temperament or hyper, you know, might bark more. But most of us are not going to tolerate that kind of temperament and therefore, you know, not breed it. I mean,
so once again, how important is it to get a Sheltie from a good, responsible, ethical breeder? Because that is an important piece of it.
Right.
But I think that's what we were trying to get across, that this is important and this is why.
Right.
You know, this breeder right here or this one isn't going to produce a dog with a temperament that's going to be yappity-yappity-yappity.
Right. I mean, and these things do come up. I mean, you know, it's in the breed, whether it's correct or incorrect. I mean, you know, it's in there, so you're going to see it every once in a while, but you're going to try not to perpetuate that.
Right.
I think a lot of owners, like what I notice, it's always cracked me up. I don't debark my dogs, and they barely ever bark. But I don't encourage, like, you know when dogs bark and people go, shh, or quiet. The dog doesn't know what you're saying, but you're answering every time it barks. So it thinks it should be doing this. So I just ignore the barking. I've never told them to shut up or anything. They bark when somebody drives up to the house or comes to the door. They might bark if I come into the kennel, but I don't really have a barking problem.
Absolutely. How you interact with your dog's definitely going to have bearing on that.
And some people really like the fact that they answer and they bark and they do encourage it. Because I've actually told a couple of people that are top breeders, you know, I'm on the phone with you. You're telling these dogs to shut up 20 times. What do you do if you just don't say anything? And they don't know what to say. They're like, well, mine bark. And I'm like, well, I think you're encouraging the barking by answering them every time they bark.
Absolutely beautiful. Okay, well, we have our veterinarian here. We're going to definitely go down this road. Talk to us. This is a pretty healthy little breed. What do we have for health issues to work with?
So a main reason that I did continue with Shelties, which comparatively they are healthy. There are not a ton of health issues. You're not really worried that every puppy that comes out, you're going to have to screen for significant issues. I mean, they do have problems that can arise, and typically we scrutinize the eyes a lot and the heart a lot. And for the most part, I have stayed with this because they are healthy and I don't.
They live forever, don't they?
They can.
Like, they're 16, ones I see,
16
yeah.
is not uncommon.
Wow. Very, very cool. And so eyes, pretty much your primary concern, a little bit of heart.
Yeah.
Okay. So not terrible bad. And again, they live forever. So this is, like, who was I talking to? Laotian people. Did you know Laotians live forever? Like 16 to 18.
Yeah. Skipper keys.
Yes,
not
exactly.
Not even the longevity, but the quality of the veterans classes in this breed, I think, is unique to the sporting breed also, but coming into Shelties, it makes you really, the older ones are some of the most beautiful ones. And
right. I've seen that in other herding breeds, actually, that you see a lot of quality as the dogs.
And they don't show their age, I don't
know.
No,
not at all.
Like, you can easily see a 10-year-old that really, you know, can still function, and a dog with less age on them and doesn't look like an archaic dog. Like some of these breeds, you know, lose
gray
color
out,
and, you know, that kind of thing.
What about the teeth? I think the teeth probably require more care than any thing on the, you know, like
on the dog.
Yeah,
interesting. Okay, so like they need cleaning. Their teeth need cleaning.
I don't like dirty teeth, but I have a friend who is really good at cleaning teeth, and she is better than most vets. Pat.
So staying on top of dental care.
Yes, and I like to have clean teeth. And one thing that bothers me, I don't even like to touch dogs that have a gross mouth. And I think it shortens their life.
Our veterinarian will tell us.
I mean, we know that dental issues can lead to systemic body issues. And just like every dog that you have, you should be brushing their teeth every other day if you want to maintain a quality, like, dentition and avoid periodontal disease. So they can build up tartar a little bit faster than some breeds, but as long as you're staying on top of it, it's not as significant. And I know a lot of the bigger breeds will say, well, we give them bones to clean their teeth, and it doesn't always work. So daily brushing is definitely
the best. Good. I can remember when I was a little kid and I started in 4-H. The girl that always beat me in 4-H had a Sheltie. just left me with a real problem with the bee. But I think that, yeah. One of the things that I would love for you guys to talk about is the adaptability, but the trainability. They can do anything. So some of the things that you do with them, some of the games that you can play with Shelties, our junior handler.
Yeah, I mean, I think they're just so eager to please. I'm actually a senior in high school right now, and I'm starting my senior independent study in 3 weeks, and I'm training the Shelties in agility. Mm-hmm. I'm training one to be a therapy dog, and I've planned this all out. You know, that's what we have to do before we leave for it. So, you know, you can really train them in pretty much anything. That's my goal for the end, to do tricks and agility and therapy dog training on a fair amount of them. So they're so eager to please, and they're so motivated by food and, like, snacks and treats and, like, all this stuff.
Scooby snacks. Hang tight, guys. Got a little bit of information for you. We'll be right back to the podcast in a minute. Heads up, crew. Join our patrons today. Get immediate access to the support of a closed Facebook chat group, special patrons-only episodes, free mentoring sessions, and more. Just like the NPR of dogdom, Pure Dog Talk brings you the news, the knowledge, and the insight to succeed with your purebred dog. In exchange, our Pure Dog patrons share the love with monthly or annual gifts, and that helps defray the cost of overhead and sort of keeping the MP3s rolling, you know? Hit me up, laura@puredogtalk.com, and I'll hook you up with the details. I just did an interview, actually, with a Sheltie breeder, Tammy Van Dusen, that does herding. And she was talking about the farm test. Does anybody here do any of those farm tests? They sounded so cool. I was wanted to talk to somebody else that did them.
I've done some, actually, with mine.
Yeah?
And, you know, I walked into this kind of farm trial with my little blue Merle Sheltie, and they had Aussies on leashes, like, lunging at sheep, my turn, or a Border Collie lost it, or Nail trying to go into the pen.
No.
So I asked, I said, you know, do I put him on the long line? Do I put him on the... It's not going to hurt any of my sheep. Just let him go. So I let him go, and he started actually doing it all on his own. So, there is that instinct.
That instinct.
In them. And he had, you know, a little flock together, and then he ran by and bit me once, and then he ran by again, because he was just so much energy and so excited. But they innately will do... Troy.
Oh. Well, and I think, too, you talk about the instincts, and this goes back a little bit to how they are to live with. I have encountered this with, like, corgis. They herd you. Do they herd you? Shelties do that?
100%.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
At family parties, you'll watch people slowly get closer and closer and closer together in these little groups, and it's because they're behind you.
Interesting.
And sometimes, like, people will come over, and they're not dog people. I was shocked. One of mine, who never does anything, it's like the biggest dullard, started nipping at the guy's heels. He was carrying all stuff up in the house. And I don't know what brought it out, but they just like are natural herders.
Right. And so that the nipping part, I mean, that's something you need to be aware of, right? If you own a Sheltie, like, okay, the dog is going to herd your children, right?
Not so much. I've heard that before, like when people call, and a lot of times, you know, these trainers will tell them, you know, oh, don't get one of those, they'll herd your children or whatever. I feel like, you know, it's more like incorporated into like a play kind of thing. I mean, I have a couple that will grab my ankles, but they're real careful not to
they don't bite. They don't break
it's
the skin
like
or anything.
They just kind of mouth your...
Yeah, they'll grab the pant leg a little bit.
More of a playing, you know, thing or whatever, but it's not anything. I think sometimes when people that are interested hear from, you know, a trainer or somebody that's marketing themselves as, you know, a breed expert or whatever will say that, and it scares people away. But it's not really like that. I mean, I think these dogs are very athletic outside, very interested in being engaged with you outside. But then when they come in, they're just relaxed, and they want to be in the same room as you, and they'll greet you, but then they usually just go somewhere in the room and just lay down.
So a little more independent, actually.
Well, independent, but just kind of, they're calm, and they want to be in the same room with you, but they're not needy. They don't want to, like, be right next to you or be in your lap, or they'll almost always just lay down in the room where you are, and then if you move rooms, within 5 minutes, the dog, I don't know what it is, but it has sixth sense about, you know, the person leaving the room or whatever, will wake up, follow you to the next room, greet you and then just kind of lay down in the room with you.
Okay.
And what I love about them is they're so much fun outside and they're so engaging, and but then they come in and they're not, you know,
clingy.
Like in the middle of the floor where you're knocking into
them. I was going to go to our sporting dog people.
Had to be in my lap. Like if I was in his vicinity, he would like pace around, and then I would sit down and he would be in my lap at all times. And the Springers are like that too. And the Sheltie, I mean, with the herding, he doesn't, but he'll poke me with his nose. Like he'll come up behind and poke me and then just like, What are you doing? And then the same thing. I'll move into a room and he'll lay down from the corner and keep an eye on me. And then if I move, he'll follow. But yeah, it's not clingy at all. It's they want to be with you, but not on top of you like the sporting dogs do.
The Brittany's are a totally different beast.
The Brittany's are food motivated. Sheltie's food motivated. But here's the difference. My Brittany's, I have kennels. They see a cookie. They jump in their kennel. They get the cookie. You turn around, you have the same cookie, you're looking at the same kennel, and you have this Sheltie that looks at you like, oh, that cookie means I go away, so I'm going to stay right here, and then as you come close, I'm going to go run in circles, play what I want to do, and then we'll think about going where you want to go.
Okay.
So it is very much a breed that is super smart, and there are now tools. A lot of us breeders have like boxes or puzzle boxes for puppies that they can climb over things, under things. But now, even on Amazon, you have these things that are toys made of plastic where you can put the food inside them and then they have to move a bar to be able to get to
it. Food puzzles. I think those are fabulous. Yeah, I use them on the wirehairs all the time.
I feel like part of this kind of goes along with it is like they're so smart and that helps them be adaptable, because like I'm still in college and I'll take my Sheltie with me to school like when I'm studying in a classroom, and she totally understands like the appropriate behavior. She won't be hyper there. She'll go in the corner and lay down, and you know, it just makes it a lot easier to take them different places with you and know
because
that
they're able to kind of assess.
Yeah, exactly. They can evaluate how they should behave in a situation.
Nice.
And like, you know, how their people are behaving.
Very cool.
And I love the fact they're the best mothers.
Oh, really?
I can honestly say I don't think I've ever had a bad mother.
Nice.
I mean,
no
C-sections. Quite amazing.
No.
Well, I've never...
Knock on wood. I never have had a C-section.
Even, you know, and hopefully I won't, but they just, even young ones with their first litter, I mean, not too young, but, you know, their first litter, you know, they just get it. And they just, they're calm. Even ones that, you know, you would think might not be calm, they're calm. And, I mean, that makes such a huge difference.
I keep every litter in my bedroom, and I have my room at, like, 85. And I just really look forward to it. I love, everybody's like, aren't you hot? I'm like, no, it's just for a week, you know, to keep them really warm, to get... I went to this seminar once many years ago, and I remember this guy was real famous. I forget his name, but he was like at University of Michigan. He said, most puppies die because they get cold.
Truth.
Now, whether this was true or not, but it made a huge impression on me. And he said, if it's 80 degrees or above, they don't get herpes. They don't get anything. So I got the state-of-the-art electric heater and ran it in my room, and I just really enjoy watching them with the puppies. And if it's warm, then I can leave the front open and, you know, see what they're up to.
Awesome.
So I really enjoy having the puppies because it's like a, you know, people are like,
super
it must be so
cute.
Much work. But I just love it. It's fun.
It is. All right. And so the last thing then when we're talking about confirmation, so we're going to give a little bit extra for the extra people who are interested in maybe participating in confirmation and junior showmanship and what have you, what is your ideal, like your mind picture? Somebody give me a mind picture, your beautiful dog.
I mean, whenever I see something, I mean, obviously I just think beautiful angles and like a nice strong neck and a beautiful expression.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's kind of like our breed is really known for like just beautiful eyes and
the
sweet
face.
Sweet face and, you know, just like... all kind of goes together.
And a good, I think size is very important, right? You have a height DQ?
Yes. The standard is 13 to 16 inches.
There we go. Okay. So when people are looking at, a, you know, maybe buying a Sheltie and they want to make sure they're getting a good one from a good breeder that they might consider showing, you want to make sure you're looking at a good, proper size.
Well, we all get, as much as we would like to think
sure.
that we're, they're all, everyone, you know.
It all happens.
Oh, no, I'm a good breed. Because I've had people call me and say, like, oh, my neighbor, they think it's a Sheltie, but it's not a Sheltie.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, it's probably a Sheltie. And I said, and any breeder tells you they don't get the big ones, they do. And it's just in the breed. and it just pops up.
Okay, so here's a good question. History. Give us the history lesson on Shelties. Somebody give me the Sheltie History 101. Where the breed started, why it started, I mean, where'd they come from?
Well, the Yaki dog, I think, was the first, the little on the Shetland Islands.
Right.
But I like to tell the story, and this is how it was told to me, that during World War II, some of the breeders that weren't being watched so closely crossed with collies. And I used to get these gigantic, I mean, they were huge. And the people would take them to the vet, and the vet would say, this, you'll be a Bi Black. This is not a Sheltie. This is a mutt. So I'd have to call the vet up and go, both of the parents of that dog that you're saying is not a Sheltie are champions. And there was evidence of the collie cross. And that's what you're
seeing. So they
seeing.
Think, you do think in the history of the breed that there was some back crossing.
Oh, yeah, there is. That's right. They used to set the type of the breed, yeah.
Okay. So it's not necessarily bred down from a collie sort of concept, but that was
no, it was
there.
Crossed. I was told, you know, when people weren't looking,
right.
And I guess I can say it, Nate Levine bred to collies. Yeah. I think they had collies, too.
Okay.
And that kind of set the more of the modern day type.
Okay.
But with that, you get the collie bloodlines. Beagles have been bred to beagles for hundreds and hundreds of years, and our dogs have been bred to collies, like, you know, as they were developing the breed, and our breed's a relatively young breed. So we get these throwback genes every once in a while that are there.
Yeah.
And, you know, some people, you know, oh, I like the sturdy Sheltie. I don't like the, you know, little tiny Sheltie.
We like
whatever.
Big ones.
Yeah, we love big Shelties, or we love little Shelties, or whatever, but... You know, the best thing to do if you really want to show a dog, you want to get into showing, is you have to start going to dog shows,
right.
And you have to kind of, it's unlikely that you can just call a breeder and say, hey, I think I'll just start showing a dog, because they're going to say, well, I'll sell you a show dog, and then you're going to come and say, wow, this is a lot of work, and this is kind of boring, and this is whatever, and then we'll never see them again, and off goes the,
pick
you know,
the
one show dog or whatever that we have, so... It's kind of a survival of the fittest, you know, whoever sticks around long enough and, you know.
I love that, actually. I love that description.
Well, it's kind of true because, you know, all of us that have been doing this a really long time have heard the story every single time. Like, oh, yeah, you know, I'm going to have show dogs and I'm going to go to dog shows and I'm going to, you know, my kid wants to blah, blah, blah. And then, you know, just like anything, it just goes on, which is fine. It's an individual decision, but we don't want you taking our prize because with Shelties, you don't often get... A lot, and
what's your
more than
size?
One or two.
What's your litter size typically?
Like 4 to 6, I
okay,
say,
so not,
average.
Right.
I mean, you might get, they don't necessarily breed true, so I mean, you might breed two of the best Shelties ever together, and you get nothing really show quality or that
nothing,
exceptional.
You know, they're just kind of
dogs.
Like, wow, I don't think, I thought that was going to work out better.
I was just telling somebody about how I had these two dogs that didn't have good rears, and I bred them together, and I got, like, the best litter I've ever had.
Yeah.
And then they all had good rears.
Right.
And I was like...
So sometimes you might get, on rare occasions, like 2 or 3 in a litter that are show quality, but sometimes you only get that one, and, you know, you're not going to necessarily take a chance on somebody that just said, hey, this seems like something I'd like to do.
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, you're going to have to kind of start out with a pet or start out with an obedience dog or, start, you know, and kind of just, once people start seeing you around, you know, then you
well,
might get
learning
a
things,
chance at something
mentorship.
Different. Right. This is like a long-term sport, really. I mean, if you want to be successful in it, you can't just dabble in it. Like, you have to be in it, you know, for 3, 4, 5 generations of dogs before you really... And even then, I mean, I've been doing this a really long time, and, you know, I think, like, oh, wow, like, this is going to be the best litter ever. And that's, like,
that's not half a death.
I got it. I got it. The formula.
Never plan the litter theme as superheroes before they're actually on the ground, let me tell
you. You have two that get together without you knowing it, and they plan their own litter, and sometimes that can be, like, better than the ones you
put. Oh, yeah. Mother Nature knows best.
Well, yeah, so it's kind of humbling.
It is.
In a lot of ways, so.
Awesome.
What I like is it's still, it's not such famous breed that it's still kind of folksy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You gotta know people. Like, they don't just let you breed to their dog if they don't know you.
No.
They've never been to your house.
It can be very challenging, like, especially, you know, as show dogs and the breeding program and everything.
Right.
You know, I think that's what attracts me to it, is because it's like, it's never just boring ever.
Right.
Because it's like there's always something new and lots
or
of
something going on
sometimes. But then the triumph will overtake the heartache, and, you know, and then we all just keep moving forward. So
yeah. Okay. So last question, because I know this is going to be one that you guys get. The color thing. Everybody has to have a sable, or everybody has to have a merle, or everybody has to have a thing. How do you talk to your puppy buyers about color?
I ask them what they want.
Yeah.
And they always say, I don't want a blue. So I go, okay, fine. I've got the try. I sometimes have a sable because I do breed. They're not disqualifying colors,
right.
But you might get a sable merle. And what cracks me up is when they come, they go, oh, I want that. And I'm like, that's the one color you said you didn't want. And this has happened so many times.
Well, because a lot of times in the books, you just go to Petco and you pick up a book on Shelties and you look and you flip through it and you see a blue and they're
it's
not
gray.
Attractive. They're not attractive at all. They're almost always like the photos from Europe.
Dingy.
And, yeah, and they're kind of this, you know.
Steel color.
Yeah, and they're just not attractive at all. And then they see them. Sometimes they'll tell me, you know, like, oh, I don't want a blue. And I'll say, well, here's my website address. It's completely not up to date or whatever, but, like, you can just see pictures and examples of whatever. And then they'll be like, well, you know, same thing. Like, wow, that's beautiful.
Right.
Or if they say they don't want a blue, I said, have you ever seen one?
Right.
I always say that.
Because, you know, the pictures don't
and
do them
do
justice.
And do you run into, in the ring, do you run into certain colors being more difficult to finish? For example, black pugs. Terribly difficult to finish versus the fawn. Do you guys run into that? You know, the buy black. Is a buy black tougher than a sable or, you know, something like that?
A little bit. I think that are judges that are all-rounders that maybe can't see black faces necessarily.
Right, right.
But if it's like a really beautiful animal and you take it to a specialty show where the judges actually get type in detail, there's not a problem. So
I've kind of run into something that lately, it might just be something silly, but I have really bright colored blues and they have white faces and some of them have blue eyes. And I've noticed lately that people have been saying, oh, I don't like those dogs with those blues with big white faces. And I'm kind of like, well, I never thought of it that way because I like it.
Yeah. Right. But that's, I mean, you do have a lot of variety in the breed and color. People have some options and choices.
Years ago, the breed that people, both the public and breeders, predominantly sable. I think sables were the prettier ones, the better quality ones were sable, and any other colors kind of lagged behind.
Mm-hmm.
But now, I think really there's not a lot of difference, and I think the public knows, you know, they've seen these other colors,
right.
Especially like with Aussies, you know, coming
sure.
up, and, you know, they've become more familiar with the blue merle, the, you know,
concept.
Pattern.
Right.
Yeah, and then I don't think there's that much of a difference. And I think in the show ring, you know, for years the quality was better in sables. And I mean, I think in a lot of areas of the country, you know, the quality is better, you know, in the tries and blues.
And this is purely personal curiosity. I have seen a white-bodied, color-headed smooth and a rough, but I've never seen it in a Sheltie. Is that something you guys see? Frown on? What is that?
A color-headed white?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, we have it in the breed.
Do you? Okay, I've just never seen one. That's why I'm asking the question.
I think people avoid breeding the white-factored ones together now more than they used to.
Okay.
I see a million mismarks, but very rarely a
yeah,
real
color-headed
white. Well, the color-headed whites, they're allowed to be shown in collies, but
mm-hmm.
right now we don't
not
allow
Shelties.
Shelties.
Okay.
And also, Shelties don't come in smooth varieties like
right.
collies do.
Right.
So, anyway, you can show a color-headed white, but even in collies, like, you don't see it that often.
Yeah.
You'll see it at really big specialties.
Yeah.
You'll they have a white class, or mm-hmm. you'll see color-headed whites.
But Shelties don't do that.
Well, we get them.
You get
them,
you
can't
but you
show
don't
them
show
if
them.
They're more than
okay.
50% white.
Okay, that's what I thought. So that's why I was just purely curiosity, because I don't know enough to be dangerous, basically. It's true. It's totally true. All right. Well, thank you guys so much for joining me. I know you guys have a big meeting to get to, and I really appreciate you taking the time. Thank you very much. Have a great national.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Take care.
As always, if you have any questions or input, we'd love to hear from you. The show notes and links to resources on today's topic are available at puredogtalk.com. Drop us a note in the comments or email to laura@puredogtalk.com. Remember, guys, this podcast is for you. So if you want to know something, give me a holler. We'll do a podcast for you. If you wouldn't mind, you could help me out here. Take a couple minutes to visit iTunes and give us a review. The Dog Show Superintendents Association is a proud supporter of Pure Dog Talk. Our dog show superintendents are the hardworking people who make the dog show function. They are advocates for education and mentorship in the purebred dog fancy. So stop by the super's desk at your next show. Tell them how much you love Pure Dog Talk and give them a shout out for their support. That's all for today. Thank you for joining us on Pure Dog Talk.